Hey everybody, it's Mark Sams here from Ninja Outreach, and today we have a really special guest. His name is Will Frazier, and he's from a company called Referral-Squatch, and that's referral-squatch.com, which is a customer referral and referral-friend program software platform. Okay, so we're going to talk to Will today about how he started the business, the journey so far, and what it's taken to get it to where it is at the moment. Okay, so Will, how are you doing?
Great, how are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing really well out here in the UK, experiencing what we would class as our British weather. It's pouring of rain. So how about yourself?
I'm great. I'm up on the west coast of Canada right now. I actually split my time between a place called Victoria and another little place called San Francisco. So both have kind of the same thing. We both get kind of interesting summers, if you will.
Okay, cool. All right, so let's get started. Let's give the audience some really good information that they can go away and sort of use to help them grow their businesses. So the first thing that I wanted to talk to you about, Will, is I wanted to understand a little bit about the backstory before you actually started referral-squatch.com. Like what was you doing beforehand? What led you into that? Was there some businesses beforehand? Just give me a bit of an overview about that.
Sure. So my background is actually as an electrical engineer.
Really?
So I went to school for engineering, and then I finished school. And during my time in school, I had done a bunch of work building weapons platforms. So I was working for Raytheon as a subcontractor down out of the States a little bit, and I was working on those kind of security projects. And so when I left university, it was right as the economic downturn was hitting North America. So instead of those jobs...
What year was that?
Oh, 2010 was that?
Okay.
Something like that?
Yeah. Okay, cool.
but that economic downturn was happening. And all those jobs that I'd kind of been interviewing for and had getting lined up, they all froze their hiring, right? They're all based on government spending. Hiring froze. It kind of turned a little bit dark there. So I did the only thing that that any responsible North American just at a university can do. I went to Europe, spent all my money. I went and bummed around, you know, Western, Eastern Europe.
How old was you?
22, 21.
Are you allowed to do that at that age? Definitely.
Yeah. No, it wasn't a high school bum around. It was at a university. I went. I kind of traveled with different people from my family to friends. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I did that for a little while, and then I kind of lucked out a little bit. There was a friend of mine who had met some people who wanted to start this entrepreneurial engineering program, which was basically the idea of how do we take guys who have engineering degrees, give them a little bit of business training, but primarily actually get them out there starting businesses. So this was being put on by a university in Canada. Mm-hmm. And so my buddy phoned me while I was traveling and said, you know, I don't know where you are, but can you be back here for the second week of September?
Okay.
So I said, sure. And I got on a plane, went back to Canada, and started school again, which was really not how I expected, A, my life after my first degree to go, but B, how I expected my entrepreneurial life to start.
So
we went back to school, and I met up with my now co-founders in this program. And it was a really, really interesting program. We did a master's of engineering, but at the same point, they kind of just threw us into the deep end and just chucked us into a room with a bunch of like final year MBA students. And it was a little bit sink or swim. So we got about an 8-month crash course in what I like to consider business lingo. We learned a little bit about business, but we mostly learned just how to talk to the MBAs without looking like idiots.
Okay, cool. So that's how you actually... Because one of my questions was, how did your team evolve, like your initial founders and stuff like that? So all of the founders were in that university or training course?
Yeah, it was all in a university course. And it was definitely a bit of a trial by fire. None of us
Was it a
really.
paid course? Did you have to pay for it?
Yes, we did. We paid. Although we also got the program was set up in a way where there was grants to cover it. So you enrolled, you then had to pay, but then there was a grant that came back to you that covered it. And this whole program was actually basically a partnership between a incubator and the university. And the reason they partnered is that they could both achieve their objectives, and they could kind of double the government money for their programs, which is a big perk we have here in Canada.
Okay,
So,
excellent.
yeah.
Excellent.
So,
So while you was there,
yeah.
how did the idea for like because obviously I don't see maybe I'm naive, but I don't see the relation between being an engineer
Yeah.
and the idea for a customer referral. Like I would assume you would have a background in marketing, and there was like
Sure.
and you felt to yourself, oh, what's like a key thing that happened? And it came from a sort of want and a need of using it versus being maybe I'm completely off point. Like maybe that is something that.
No, you're not off point, Mark. No. So what actually happened is my co-founders and I actually we launched a totally different company first.
Oh, okay.
So it was still in the kind of promotions, social media space. But this was when social media was still a word we could use to describe products. We created a social media promotion suite and monitoring, a social media promotion and monitoring suite.
Oh, I see.
So
Okay.
we were, this idea of like, how do you manage your social? Here's a tool that lets you monitor what people are saying.
Kind of like a tweet deck.
Kind of like that. And then we expanded it into also, and here's a way you could encourage people to keep spreading the word with winning sweepstakes and other
Ah,
prizes.
okay. So that incentive thing was starting from there. So the basics of it was starting from that initial product.
Exactly. And that was a really interesting experience. And that was actually what we ended up building out of this program, this university program I was talking about. And that product ended up getting used by people in the entertainment industry to help promote films, people in the music industry, people in the banking industry, a wide range of people. But kind of two things happened. One, promotions are temporary, and so we noticed that we would have a lot of churn on the platform. Because even the longest running promotion runs a year, but most run a month to three.
Yep, that's
So
very true.
that was a little bit annoying. And the other thing that we noticed was that, what we were doing, getting people to share, spread the word about, cool things, we could continually do it. So we knew that we could run these programs for a couple of years, at least, and still drive value for companies, but the companies were thinking about them as promotions. So those two things were kind of interesting observations we made. And then the great entrepreneurial lesson of don't build a business on someone else's platform. Facebook changed the way that Facebook worked and pretty much destroyed that product overnight.
Oh man, I had a business that crashed because of that as well.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a soul crushing situation without a doubt. Yeah, no, definitely.
But we learned a lot of stuff during that around, like I said, not to build a business fully reliant on Facebook. But we also, interestingly enough, while we were running that product, which was a SaaS product, we also discovered that there wasn't a lot of tools to help us with customer marketing automation. So marketing automation around after someone becomes your customer. There's lots of tools to help you get their email addresses, maybe continue to email them, help them buy. But once they buy, there wasn't really a whole lot of tools to help us. We ended up building a lot of it ourselves. And one of kind of what we thought was the most obvious tools to help with customers or customer marketing was just simply this idea of a referral platform. Your customers are the most influential form of marketing you possibly can have. So we thought it would only make sense that we would, turn on a referral program. And when we went out there and started looking at the tools available, we realized that most of what was available was really built for e-commerce, which just has an entirely different way of looking at a customer. So So yeah, so that was kind of the big lessons we learned while we were working on that product.
Okay, cool. So before we go into like referral Sasquatch
Sure.
and some stuff like that, I want to find out because this engineering thing is stuck in my mind. The reason why? No, it's a good thing because what it is that my stepdad, he's an engineer, and I know that he talked to me about certain things, and the way that he's very process driven. Everything has like a step, and it's analyzed. And what I'm trying to understand from you or get some feedback from you on is how does the engineering mindset help you in business?
Yeah, well, I like to believe that if you learn business or you learn engineering, you actually learn a lot of the same skills. Because
Okay.
engineering, when at least in Canada, when we complete our engineering degrees, we take an oath, and in part of that oath is stating the fact that all I know is that I know nothing, and the idea being that we have only learned a process or the set of tools to use to figure out what we need to do. So it's very, very analytical. So some of the guys who have joined us from the joined the company from more of a marketing background, they often mention how much they like working with us because it doesn't become an emotional fight based upon what I think is the best idea. We try and bring it back to data. So with that engineering mindset, it's all about analytics, it's all about data, it's all about, like you said, like process, which is great for most things. It can be a little bit annoying when you're just starting out and you don't have data yet. But yeah, that engineering mindset, especially when you're building a software product too, right? Because everything has to go in the right step in the right sequence for it to work.
Must
But
help with management as well.
yeah, for sure. Now, engineers are notorious for having some questionable interpersonal skills. So it does still take the right engineer to do that. But yes, there's a lot of value in a lot of the different areas. But I like to believe that a good businessman, a good entrepreneur, really has that exact same mind, right? They're analytical. Entrepreneurs don't take risk. They look to mitigate risk. It's all
Definitely.
about the plan.
No, definitely, without a doubt. Okay. So referralsasquatch.com has started.
Sure. So yeah, that was a bit of a scary moment.
Let's talk to me about the name itself coming about, buying the domain
Sure.
name. I guess, tell me about the plan that you put together, like how you decided what needed to be done, how you like worked out the marketing plan and what actually got you the results and the good and the bad of it.
Yeah, sure. So Referral Sasquatch was a very rapid pivot from our original company, our original product. And what
And
was
that
it?
occurred because Facebook messed
Yeah.
up. What, okay, so it was like you're all scrambling trying to work out what to do next sort of thing.
Basically, yeah. And we held what we called a blue, what do we call it? A blue sky week. And this basically, we took the team and we said, okay, guys, Facebook's changed the rules. We're gonna have to look at playing a different game here. And we said, okay, anything is open. You can tear anything down from the old business. Don't feel attached to anything. But we have learned how to get people talking online. So we've learned how to get people making these shares, recommendations, referrals, kind of whatever context you put it in. So you want to keep that learning moving forward, and want to take our other learnings with us. So let's start brainstorming. And we spent about a day or two just kind of throwing ideas around, a day or two throwing them around and kind of researching them. And then what we did, and this is probably not the business school proper solution, we kind of broke up into some groups and took what we thought were the two of the more promising ideas, and we quickly put together a lean canvas, like a lean business model. Do you know those?
Tell me more.
So yeah, so the lean canvas model is just simply very rapidly on one page helps you break out an entire business model. So it helps you break down kind of, I don't remember all the exact fields on it, but what the revenue model is, what the competitive advantage is, what the market's like, things like that. So we each group quickly put together this lean canvas to make sure that we kind of thought through the business a little bit. And then we gave each group 5 days to make five sales. Now, at this point, we have a piece of paper
Wow,
that,
that's a tough
yeah.
topic.
So this is a software product. We had no mock-ups. We had no design drawings. We had very loose specs. But we had, for each of these, we had a business model and a price point. And the pitch was, you had to go make five sales. You didn't have to go get five people that said they'd be interested. You had to go make five sales on a product that didn't exist.
What made
And
you come
so,
up with such a like that's a, like a very hard goal. Like
yeah. We picked it because we thought if you could sell a product that didn't exist, that means we could sell it, you know, we'd be able to sell that pretty quickly when it did exist.
which is yeah, it's definitely makes sense.
Now we did have to be open with people we were talking about that it didn't exist, which made it extremely hard. So, because if, as soon as you start talking about a product, they say, "Can I see it?" And you have to be able to say, "Well, we're building it."
You have to take money for this product.
Yeah, we had to get people that were willing to put money on the table for a product that didn't exist. Now, the truth
Crazy.
is, we didn't take the money.
Yeah.
We just got them to the point that they were willing to put it on the table.
Okay.
Because they always said, okay, let us actually build this and we'll confirm it. So we went down two paths, and the path that we found was working the best at the time was Referral Sasquatch. And at that point, obviously, it was nameless, but the whole.
Just so I know, was you in the team of Referral
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Sasquatch? Okay,
Yeah, there's a little background to that. Yeah, so it was actually really originally the idea of Referral Sasquatch was thrown up on the board during our brainstorming session I talked about. Was actually just thrown up on the board as almost a throwaway idea. Just we were just kind of everything sticks to the board, just keep brainstorming. And after you know, a little while, we kind of started circling back to it, remembering just how annoying it had been when we wanted to do this for our SaaS platform. And just kind of kept coming back to it and adding our own experiences to it. But yeah, so we did, you know, that was how we kind of said, okay, we can sell this thing that it doesn't exist. Let's get going with it. And that was kind of how we decided to go down this path. And that took us about a week. So in 7 days, we went from, oh no, Facebook's changed the game, to having five sales of a product that didn't exist, and just getting to it.
Let me just dig into that a little bit more. Like, so I've heard like of that model of is it called pre-sales before you create a product and getting
Sure.
companies to
Yeah.
obviously invest. I think the foundation do something like that. And so, talk to me a bit more about how you actually went about doing that. I assume you selected somebody to, was it cold calling, cold emailing? Like just 'cause I'm
Yeah.
really interested in how you actually achieved that.
Sure. So we started off with calling people that we had an existing relationship with,
Makes sense.
and internally, we knew that if we got deals done there, we weren't really going to be able to count them because there was a chance that, you know, these are people that we had helped out in the past, we had worked with in the past, and they might be willing to just buy anything we're selling. But what they did is they really helped us refine what we were saying. You know, so you can imagine
Okay, yeah.
if I'm pitching a product that doesn't exist, I can probably pitch it, you know, 20 to 30 times in a day. You know, when you're really going for it. So, you know, you pretty quickly start to refine the pitch. And what we started to hear was the same, I think there was three stories we kind of kept hearing when we talked to people about the idea. Kind of the first one was like, I wish this had been there when we built something, you know, when we had to build something ourselves. We built something ourselves and it sucks. We need to replace it. We've never done it because we don't have the time to build it or something like that. But the very first step was phoning people that we knew. And just getting on the phone and just giving them a pitch, hearing their feedback, hearing their thoughts. Once we kind of thought we had like we'd heard like the same pieces of feedback, you know, 10 times it felt like, it was like, okay, now let's just go start calling anyone. But what we decided was obviously we need to look for innovators because not only do we not have a product or not have case studies like they're, you know, large companies often want. We didn't have any mock-ups or any product to show. So we started tracking down some innovators, and we did things like one of the guys on the team started in live chat on a company's website, and slowly but surely moved his way through live chat up to the CMO of the company.
That's so cool.
And he was just
so cool. That is so like guerrilla marketing, just getting in there and making it happen.
Yeah, exactly. There was just no holds barred. And I think it took him about 3 hours on live chat till finally the CMO could jump on and then, you know, pitch the idea. And like, and so really cool some of the stuff we did, but it was just about, like I said, we first kind of practiced that story, and then we just went anywhere and everywhere we could to tell that story and get some get it to resonate with a few people. Mm-hmm. And we did have some luck. You know, we could kind of point to some of the other things we had done in our other company, so we have some credibility.
Yeah, definitely.
But obviously, we were still looking for innovators.
Okay, no, that's a really cool. And I just wanted to dig into that because I can see that a lot of people can get some value out of that. And I think one of the key takeaways from that, rather than the specific things that you did, is that it was like you literally did whatever it took to get the results. Like getting on, starting on a live chat and then working your way up. Like that's doing whatever it takes. We've done that ourselves, like where I've started on live chat and then end up getting a guest blog post and so on and so forth because I couldn't find the contact details for a company. So yes, it's definitely a powerful strategy without a doubt.
It's always amazing to us how many people want to talk that you think you can't access. You know, it's amazing how often an email, and not even a horribly well written email, but an email to the right person, a phone call, you get a hold of someone, and a lot of people are actually far more helpful than you would expect. They're far more interested than you might expect. You know, you kind of have that worst fear in your mind. Mm-hmm. And what we discover like regularly is that lots of people want to talk. They've got questions, problems, things you can help with, things they can help you with, and they're far more, far kinder than you might expect. And so that initial fear of like, they, you know, I don't know anyone, how do I get them to buy, you know, really it's just a matter of starting the conversation in any way you can. I mean, if that's, you know, find their email address and send them an email, phone the front desk, start on live chat, oh, it all works. You just gotta be willing definitely. To do it.
I think another good thing about what you said there was that you started off and started speaking to people that you knew, but even if you didn't know them, just taking those first calls is like you're just burning those calls because you're just really tweaking your message. Mm-hmm. You're trying to work out what people are going to be saying back to you. And then you might be stumped on certain answers, but you can go away from that call and then say, well, you said this. How do I now answer this next time around, sort of thing. And you're better for every new call that you make. And I think for a lot of people, there's a lot of fear in that unknown of going out there and just calling people and them just saying, look, I'm not interested, like, but really, it's not a big deal when they do say that because there's so many other companies that you can talk to and so many opportunities that are available.
And one of the lessons we've learned is, and we learned this from one of our advisors, but we found it come true, you know, time and time again now, when someone says no, it actually means later. So quite often you get a no, and don't feel like you got a no and you're dead in the water. You got a no right now. What you're doing doesn't resonate with them. But time and time again, we've seen people that said, you know, emphatically no, show up, you know, 6 months later, 9 months later, and say, yep, now yes.
I see that all the time. Like people that we initially spoke to on our initial interviews when we were trying to work out the best ways to have the product out there, and then like 6 months in, like, I'll see the email and I'll be like, I swear I know that email. And I'll run the email in a search in my search bar, and it'll go back and I'll be like, oh, that's the person I sent that email to. And he told me, no. So I've definitely seen that. I've definitely seen that. So cool. Okay. So now you've got the business running, like, and, well, you've started the business now.
Yeah.
And you decided to go with referralsasquatch.com. Now, marketing, first of all, so product development,
yep,
and marketing, I guess that's quite a big topic, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a bit of a doozy, but we'll give it a shot. So product development, we're very large believers in lean, agile development methodologies.
I tested that as well.
So we had our first product, our first version, and it was a rough version, but our first version was in market 3 months after we did those sales calls.
That's not bad.
So yeah, so we moved like hell. We had at that point three people, 2.5 people developing the product. And we were trying our best to drop in, things that would help the platform in the future while still getting this thing up in 3 months. And so, the very first version was really, we'd pitched it, exactly what we had pitched, we built, and at this point we didn't know if it was, for better or for worse, but we had to get it in market so we could see if it was going to work. And that was a really rapid. So, I don't, not to go too technical or too nerdy, but we started using the agile methodology. So these ideas of like sprints, and every 2 weeks we release something, and we got the infrastructure set up and in place. But once we got that first version out, we moved over to this methodology called Kanban, and the whole idea of that is just as soon as you finish a feature, you release it. And we realized that
No matter
rapid
what.
evolution, pardon?
No matter what.
No matter, well, as soon as it's finished, but it's
Okay.
like there's no holding back to batches. It's just as soon as the thing you're working on is done, it goes out,
You
and it
test it
really.
first, right?
Pardon? You test it?
You test it first, or you just put it up and.
Yes,
Okay, cool.
test it first. Yes. So it's done. Done in our books is that it's programmatically tested, it's user tested if need be. All those things are complete, but instead of moving in packs of features, you just go one at a time. And it allows us to very rapidly improve and modify the product. So for us, product evolution for those after that first product came out, it really was just about getting on the phone with customers, users, hearing what's missing, trying to make sure we understood that, and then implementing it as kind of as fast as we could. And kind of ever since then, we're big fans of getting new, existing, past customers on the phone. We have no fear of getting that demo call, that phone call, that tech call, whatever it is, because every time we get that call, we learn something new that we need to put into the way we're thinking about the product. We learn, oh, people are really interested in knowing this about their customers, or oh, people are getting really confused by this. But for us, since ever since that very those those first week of phone calls, always tried to get on the phone with customers and potential customers, and that's really been a big leading force in our product development.
You can get so much insight from doing that.
It's almost crazy to think that you wouldn't do it. I know people, some people don't feel comfortable, or some people believe that they've got too many users, and a few users won't be representative, or whatever it might be. But it's amazing when you get on the phone and they're just honest. They're polite normally, but they're honest and direct, and you just like in 30 minutes, it's just like amazing what you learn.
It's true. Like you can like one thing that we learned is that like you by getting on the phone with certain people, sometimes they were just like they'd had the software but they hadn't done nothing with it,
Yeah.
and they'd be like, what's going on? Like they or they book a call with us and they'd be like, why can't you ever start using it? Oh, I just didn't know what to do. But there's how-to videos. Oh yeah, I just didn't know what to do. But then once I sat down, I explained to them, well, you can do this, you can do that. They started getting really excited, and then all of a sudden, you start noticing like their activity increase within the tool, and so on and so forth. So yeah, I definitely see the value in that without a doubt.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah,
cool.
and the challenge, the kind of the counter that people will bring up to it, but it's just a challenge to work through, is you can't build everything based upon what the customer tells you. There's a, is it Henry Ford or whatever, the quote being, if I'd asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. You always got to break it down to the core problem, and then build back up, but it's still some pretty amazing insight.
Definitely,
Yeah.
definitely, definitely. So, as product development, like
Yeah.
in regards to marketing, generating traffic, like what are some of the grassroots stuff that you were doing to get leads, get traffic? I
Yeah.
assume some of it was doing phone calls, but more from a like online marketing perspective.
Sure. So, Probably right after we got those that very initial product up, at that point we thought, okay, it's time to start thinking about really getting this out there. 'Cause that first version wasn't set up to have people automatically signing up and setting up and all that. So we thought, okay, time to start thinking about marketing here as we get these things put in place. And I've always been a big believer in inbound marketing. So like you said, like content, traffic generation, things like that. But I knew that a strong inbound strategy was going to take some time to set up. You know, it's going to take some time for that long tail search results to work in your favor, to get ranked highly, things like that. So we started down a path of in 12 months wanting to have this recurring traffic coming out of our inbound marketing efforts. So we knew that we were going to put our heads down for 12 months before we really saw the results. And thankfully, the team was willing to get on board with me on inbound marketing. They all kind of said, "Well, I've heard the word, I've seen it online. I guess it works. You say we're gonna do it, let's go."
Let's do it. So
So yeah. So then the problem was, what the hell are we going to create? You know, it was not exactly easy task in the beginning. You know, we'd all written, but we'd written things like reports for school and you know, maybe a co-blog post for our other site, but it never really been a major initiative. We started by hacking it. We started attending conferences, and we would write blog articles that were basically summaries of someone's talk.
Oh, excellent.
But we would, of course, credit the speaker. And at first, you might think, "Oh no, that speaker's going to call you out on plagiarism," or you know, no, we recapped their talk, we gave them credit, and we found that most speakers would actually stop by, leave a comment, share it with their audience. They were actually flattered that you thought their talk was so good
It's a
that
form
you
of
were going to bring
curation, right?
about. Pardon?
It's a form of curation.
Exactly, right? It's a force that you summarize, you curate. So you go to a conference and you write, you know, there's 15 talks, you write about four of them. The audience loves it. Like people out there online, they want it, and the speakers are willing to share it with their audience.
Plus, if you put your own opinions and views in on it as well,
Yeah.
it gives it its own unique twist.
Yeah. So we started kind of in that, just how do we repurpose some content? We also wrote some articles that were a little bit, you know, keyword baity, to be perfectly honest. You know, we have some articles that still do very well today that were on like the terminology of customer referral programs and things like that.
You've got
We
to do
basically
that.
started, we just started creating content. And then we brought on this young guy, his name was Brandon Gaines, came on to join us. And well, we were in this middle of this project, and bless his laziness.
Why'd you say that? That
Because
sounds strange.
he looked at all this content we had created, and he said, "Okay, cool. Why don't you take these 15 blog articles and say them into a camera, and we'll put a video course out? Why don't we take these five blog articles and make an e-course out of them? We'll just copy paste, put some header bot or footer will be great." And he just started looking at our content as the kind of the putty to build other content from. And so he really taught us this art of the repurpose. And so that's been a huge part of our content strategy. So now today for our inbound content strategy, you know, we release 1 to 2 ebooks a quarter. We do at least one webinar a month. We have our e-course, our video courses, our blog. Of course, you know, and that's all kind of working now. But it all a lot of that idea of, you know, new mediums came from the idea of repurposing existing content.
No, that's really powerful. Without doubt, like Content Marketing Institute, they talk about repurposing content a lot, like being able to turn like your blog post into slides and distributing it on SlideShare and things like that and videos. So it's definitely powerful because you want to try to be everywhere that people consume the content. So if you can repurpose it in different media platforms, it's definitely going to add value to your presence.
Yeah, and it's funny because at first we thought it was at first we almost had this like concern like, aren't people going to get bored of it, or isn't it going to be, you know, somehow people weren't going to like it? But of course we realized that the people that like SlideShare probably aren't the people on, you know, Maybe they're not the same people that are on YouTube. Maybe they're not the same people that are reading your blog. Maybe, you know, people have their mediums of choice. So you just want to make sure that
Different
you're
folks,
in that
right?
medium. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, cool. So, like, now, so how long has the business been running for now?
So now we're just over 2 years. So
Okay, 2 years.
it's been a while, it seems, since those original phone calls.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, like, what's the plans like moving forward? What's the plans like in regards to maintaining growth? Well, not maintaining, growing it even more, taking it to the next level. Like, what's some of the things you guys are thinking about? Obviously, I don't want you to give me your whole blueprint, but like, just some of your
No.
ideas.
Yeah, so one of the things that surprised us was that, and if my investors are listening, it never surprised us. We knew this was coming.
Okay.
The number of enterprise clients that we're working with. So originally, we really expected the startup community to rally around what we were doing. But what we discovered very quickly is that actually these kind of customer marketing initiatives are even harder to make possible in an enterprise. They may actually have less resources available than a startup because they are all booked 3 years out. You know, they're actually, you know, they're coordinating across like four. We did one project, we had to coordinate across seven subcontractors. You know, like you think just how complex it gets. So we never expected the enterprise demand. But now we're servicing, you know, Fortune 100 companies. So we've really got a lot of growth still left in the enterprise sector,
That's really cool.
and we're really having to turn ourselves on to enterprise marketing. Of course, enterprise marketers still read blogs and go after content, but there's a whole bunch of other things we can do to help them discover us. The
So
other thing is really on
the
a
inside sales will be one of them, right?
inside sales, potentially even some outbound marketing, like some cold calling 2.0 work.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Some things like that, as well as just more of a probably more of a presence at specific events and things like that. So there's a lot we can do to continue to grow into that enterprise sector. But as far as the product goes, we think there's a ton of growth. You know, today we are touching on referral programs, but we really see there as a whole, you know, there's a gap right now in customer marketing automation. And when we say that, we mean the marketing automation systems that help you with people that are currently your customers. So how do you help customers in an automated way? How do you help customers buy more? So upgrade, buy another product. How do you help them refer friends, write reviews? Basically everything you want to do with someone after they're a customer. Today we feel there's a bunch of platforms that help gather insight, but not help you actually take action. And we see a huge opportunity in helping people take action when marketing to their existing customers.
As you say certain things, I'm thinking to myself that I can see how that'd be of value to us, like where we'd be able to, like, in fact, we've had certain scenarios where it was like, okay, we've got like a free tool that goes along with what we do, like it's a desktop browser, and I was like, and I remember saying, why don't we create some sort of referral thing so that they get access to the free tool, but they have to share it online and stuff like that. And literally, just because of resources, we just had to say, just put it up and let them have it free, and we'll get the lead, and go back and do that later. But if there was like a product that we could buy, and we weighed up what it would cost us in resources versus actually just purchasing a product, it might make sense to actually get a product that we can just integrate into our tool.
And that's we kind of see there's all sorts of opportunities for that where the scenario you just described happens. It's we really should do this. We can't, or we don't have time, or we don't fully know what that would actually look like. So we're gonna pin it to the wall and we'll come back to it later. You know, we were talking to one of the kind of the we'll call them the royalty of the internet the other day, and they were saying, you know, they've been trying to launch a referral program for over 4 years now, internally. And this could be any customer marketing automation initiative, but it happens all the time where it isn't mainline product, so it just gets bumped. It doesn't make queue. And these are guys that have, you know, thousands of people working for them, probably tens of thousands of people working for them, and they still have to bump these initiatives. So that, I mean, but I mean, it's the same thing today. You know, you probably didn't sit down one day and say, I should write a CRM. You probably said, I should take a look at Salesforce. You know, It's not like I'm going to build my own marketing automation suite. It's like I'll take a look at HubSpot, Marketo, whatever. This is the same thing we see with customer marketing automation. It's just becoming more obvious that, a complete review management, customer referral program, retention system, they're big projects actually. And you need someone who's going to just take that over for your company.
Into retention system, like that's something that's important because obviously churn affects a lot of SaaS businesses. And if you can
And
do
today there's
things to, yeah.
Some great tools that help you identify who's likely to churn, like Intercom, even I think in their free version, they let you know like who's slipping away. But hey, when that number is 150 people are slipping away today, I don't know what the heck I'm gonna do about it. Really, what am I mean, at some point you go
Sure, it
like,
just lets you know, like, okay, great.
yeah, thanks, that's awesome. I'm gonna have a little tear and then I'm gonna go back to work. Versus like, we see these people are slipping away, so what's going to happen, right? And in our mind is all about like, what is the action? And we want to help people bring action to that insight. You have an insight about your
That's
customers,
powerful.
great. Let's give you a platform that can take action. And what we've built that's kind of unique around that is that our platform has the ability to tie into monitoring user behavior, actually directly engaging them with either pop-ups, emails, or embedded experiences, and then if need be, actually modifying their bill. So actually adjusting the offer on the table for them. So we have a huge amount of power we can help there. And that's one of the areas we want to grow. We want to help people really market to their existing customers.
I'm liking the sound of it, and it definitely sounds like the type of stuff that as you start to build your business, you start to realize how important these additional things are that are just not apparent on the surface when you initially start.
You're dead right. I don't know if you know it, but probably about 4 years ago, it was Dave McClure from 500 Startups had this pirate metrics was still popular. So it was acquisition, activation, revenue, retention, referral,
Oh man, I'm sure
and
I've
so
missed
these are
some.
the five steps that he was arguing you go through. And the truth is that the vast majority of people today are really still either in activation or revenue in the way they look at it. And as the industry of the web continues to evolve, people are going to get more and more focused on this idea of revenue retention and referral and acquisition and activation are going to become kind of more table stakes, if you will, more expected.
Definitely. As I say, we're like 6 months, or sorry, 7 months in to a company that which we're opening our shopping cart, and we're already seeing those types of things and thinking like how do we solve those problems? Without a doubt. Okay, so just gonna ask you a couple more questions. I'm gonna wind this up. So out of everything that you've learned today, what would you say has had the greatest impact on generating results for your business?
That's a good question. So it may not be the most directly usable advice for someone, but I would say there's the old saying of fake it till you make it. I would say forget that saying, because everyone's faking it. So just go make it. Just don't worry about the fact you're faking it. Just go do it. And the more that I get up when I'm looking at some challenge, I'm looking at something I need to do, and it's just instead of worrying about all this, oh, they're gonna notice that we haven't done this before or whatever, it's like, okay, just go do it. You may have to do your reading, whatever, but just go do it and stop worrying that someone's gonna call you on it.
No, I agree 100%. That's actually some really good advice about that, because I think the fear of a lot of things stops people from doing a lot of stuff that can actually get their business to that next level. Okay, so what do you enjoy most about what you do, or what drives you to keep going?
Wow.
That's an important question, because the reason why I ask that question is that as you're growing and you're building the business, like there's some ups and there's some downs, and there's some arguments that happen, and do you know what I mean? So it's like I think that's something that a lot of people go through.
I mean, People often ask what's kind of the hardest part of starting a company, and I actually believe it's the emotional roller coaster that can come with it. You know, on a day where you have your highest high, you can also have your lowest low, and it just happens. You know, it's you just won the largest customer you've ever had, and you just got the worst review ever written about you. You know, those things can stack up. So you're right, the motivation to continue going, that love of it. You need to find somewhere where you can kind of keep that and come back to it during the hard times. But for me, you know, it's kind of weird, but for me, it's the people.
I don't feel this way
It's
at all.
my team. It's the clients we're working with. It's, you know, seeing a client or a team member succeed and knowing that what we're putting together is making that possible. You know, really. It's at the end of the day, what we're doing has to provide value and has to help people on both sides of the table. And, you know, the more that I can do to help that happen, I think the better it is for me. But that's really what keeps me going, is just knowing that we're trying to help people. I mean, sure, we build marketing tools, but those marketing tools help others, you know, grow their businesses, put food on the table, hire new staff. You know, some of our programs help donate to charity, help, you know, change the world, really. So as long as, you know, we're working with cool people inside the company and out, it's a pretty good day for me.
No, definitely. Okay. Now, just off the topic of business a little bit, like, what do you do in your spare time when you're not working on the business?
So first of all, if you're working on a business and you don't have any spare time, take some spare time.
Yeah, definitely.
We have this expression, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So if they say one of the guys I read a bunch of is Jason Lemkin, you know, he's done some stuff that shows it's something like 7 years is the average time it takes for the start of a B2B software business to acquisition or exit. So it's going to take some time. As for me in my spare time, my wife is a sommelier, so a lot of my time is spent with wine and food, be that touring wineries or just exploring, trying to find a new place to go, a new restaurant or wine bar or something like that to go
Nice,
visit.
nice,
So
nice.
yeah, and cooking, you know, those kind of normal food and wine type of endeavors. And then I've got my more dirty secret, if you will.
Are you
I'm
sure
a
this is going to be okay?
it's not dirty that way. It's
Okay.
more like the thing that, you know, the embarrassing thing. But
Guilty pleasure.
my wife and I are both big Disney Parks fans. So I love like Walt Disney World and Disneyland from a operational perspective. The engineer in me just loves to see an organization have that many people moving in so many different directions and have it work so well. And my wife loves the pixie dust, as she says. So,
Yeah, no, well, that's good. That's cool. That's cool. That's definitely cool. All right. So, for people wanting to know more about you and your business, like, how do they keep up to date with what's going on with Sasquatch?
yeah, so easiest way is to referralsasquatch.com/blog. Easiest place to just get kind of industry commentary articles, things like that. If you want to, you know, follow me or the business personally on Twitter, I am at Get Fraser, FRASER.
I'll put that in on I'll put that in on the show notes.
Cool. And yeah, if you want to follow Referral Sasquatch on Twitter, it's Get Sasquatch, SaaSquatch.
That'll go in on the show notes as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Straight over there.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right.
Yeah.
Well, Will, thank you very much for coming on today. You've definitely given us some great insight into your business, the journey, and some really good gems that I think people could go away and use, because it's the stuff that it's not the theory stuff, it's the stuff of building real businesses. So thanks so much, Will.
Thank you very much for having me on here, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Great stuff. Speak to you soon. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye bye.